Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Cardistry Talk. And today I am joined by Ryan. He is known as one fanny boy, Bouchard Ryan on Instagram. You may know him for his fans, which is what he kind of specializes in. And I'm super happy to have him here today for that reason, because it's a topic we haven't talked much about on the podcast. And I'm hoping to learn a little bit more about how I can make my fans better. Excuse me. Ryan, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. It's really nice to be able to talk about my style or side of cardistry, because it differs a lot from other people's in the community. So it's really nice to be able to spread that, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Definitely really packet cutter focused right now. But my first question for you is just kind of, how did you get into cardistry, and kind of how long have you been at it?
So I started cardistry in my freshman year in high school. So 5 or 6 years ago, I'd say. And I started similar to how everybody else started, where they started in magic, and how everybody started in magic is similar to how I started, where you either have a family member or a relative, or a family member or a friend who like shows you a trick, and then you can't figure it out, so you try and figure it out and then devote your life to the craft, essentially. But mine was a little different, as my friend showed me a trick and we were on a school bus. It was 2-card Monty, and it was so bad that I figured out how to do it, and essentially he showed me how to do it live while he was doing it. And ever since then, I was hooked on magic. And what allowed me to transition from magic into cardistry was the fact that I wasn't focused solely on the magic itself. Like, a lot of people do magic to like get the effect of wowing people, or to get the satisfaction of seeing how something happens. But what I was really interested in was essentially the mechanics behind moves. So I wasn't really big into like stage illusions or other things like that, but I was very big into like in the hand stuff and things like color changes or card manipulation, which allowed me to essentially transition really smoothly into cardistry, because cardistry is very big on that aspect of magic. And I remember the thing that allowed me to transition from magic to cardistry was Chris Ramsey's videos, because he focused on both. And it was during a time period where he was into teaching cardistry from what he learned. I think it was through Illusionist, their website back then, and their YouTube channel, that he was teaching a lot of cardistry. And that's how I transitioned. I remember it was his faux cut that was the first move that I remember being the move that I learned from him. And ever since then, I was really into cardistry. And I started, like everybody else, just doing basic moves like Thumb Fan, Charlier, Revolution Cut, learning those. And then I was really into a lot more miscellaneous moves like Bloom, and then trying to inevitably figure out how to do behind the back flicker like everybody else tries to do. And then I think it was a video of Baptiste doing Naoki in both hands with like 6 decks in a row. On like a shin limb Instagram combination video. And ever since then, I was hooked onto that fan. And then over and over and over, after practicing and learning it, I really liked fans. And I think I owe that a lot to my OCD. And ever since then, it's been pretty much just fans. So yeah.
Obviously, you've been gravitating more towards fans, as you said. You say it might be partly in part with your OCD, but what is it about fans that you find that you're always drawn to, and what about fans do you enjoy?
It's the ability to, in my opinion, literally perfect them. Because with fanning, obviously it's the same ideas and mindset behind all of cardistry when you're recording and filming it, which is like lighting and positioning of the camera versus your hands, and the flow of the progression of the moves that you're doing, or the flow of the soul move that you're doing. But whereas with cuts, the whole perfection thing can be either syncing it to music, or to get the flow of the cut down, or getting packets to be very even and very square. With fans, the big thing that you want is you want to get the cards to be really evenly spaced. And in my opinion, that's something you can literally perfect. And that's what's always drawn me to it. Because with cuts, because when I tried cuts and tried filming cuts in my early days of cardistry, I noticed that there was always something I can nitpick at my cuts. Like I always wanted it to do this way and this way, which does, while it does drive me to perform better and to keep going with cardistry, I never got the satisfaction of really liking what I did. And being someone who draws and does art and has written things in the past and is now actively doing like music production, one big thing that I tell people when they say that they want to get into other hobbies that are art related in the general sense of the term is that I tell them, while you do want to be doing something that you can look at and always say, I want to improve this and I want to improve this, you have to be able to do something that you can get to a point where you're satisfied. And I believed that with cuts, I wasn't able to do that because for a multitude of reasons. But for fanning, I found it a lot easier that I could get a lot more satisfied with the individual spacing of the cards, and that was a very big driving force. But like I said, it allowed me to look at some of my fans and be like, I really liked that. I really liked doing that. And looking at some back at some of my fan posts and seeing that and not nitpicking everything. And so I think that ultimately was the big reason I was driven to fans, and it's why I stuck with them since, yeah.
So I think one thing I think is very interesting that I'm just going to pluck out of what you just said is kind of the idea of perfecting versus kind of creating moves. That's something I've talked about on the show a little bit with like Leon Tay and some people in the past, but never really from a fan perspective. What is your kind of thoughts on perfecting versus creating moves?
So, perfecting versus creating, it's been a thing that has actually come up a lot in my, I guess, internal discussions regarding fanning, or whether it's like with another person who does fanning, like Baptiste or Eddie, or just with myself, because creating versus perfecting is almost like a one-sided thing towards perfecting. Whereas, because, and what I mean by that is, I'm a person who believes that while creating is ultimately the only way we can go forward for cardistry, like if we hadn't created moves that have blown up in the past, then I don't think cardistry would have evolved essentially, because that's how trends are created and that's how moves are brought into a spotlight, and that's what keeps people going. While I think that is ultimately the only the most healthy thing for cardistry, when you do fans, you kind of have to come to terms with the fact that almost every fan, at least the things that I can think of, have been created. And that everything that you are going to be creating, if you do try and create fans, are going to be essentially, what would be the word? Just redone versions of other fans.
Extensions
Yeah,
or
extensions. Extensions are a big one in the fan community. That's a really good way of describing it. And like some of the moves that I'm most known for, like the Carnahan extension that I posted on that I got posted on BCA for, that is just a Carnahan extension that's combined with like an inverse fan. It's not a sole true creation. And not a lot of people, but a couple people messaged me after that and they said, why is this posted on BCA? It's not like a true actual creation. And while I do kind of agree with them, a lot of people kind of have to realize that with fanning, it's physically like, and I'm pretty confident when I say it's impossible to create a true, solely original move within fanning. And for example, things like Jin Fan or like Mind Flayer by Lucas Rebell. Mind Flayer is just a modified version of what's it, a Vad Fan by Burger. And things like Pinky 360 by TY, it's just essentially just 360 flipback fan without the flipback. And those are kind of the things that we kind of have to come to terms with within the fanning, I want to say community, even though it's not really a community in of itself, the subgenre of cardistry, is that you almost can't create moves. But at the same time, creating moves within fanning is different than other genres of cardistry like cutting or like aerials or stuff like that. It's actually really similar to aerials now that I think about it. Whereas the whole idea of an aerial can't be recreated or branded as something differently. The only thing you can do is either add more cards to the air or catch it in a different way. Whereas with fanning, you're just adding more cards at a different area, or you're holding it or spreading it in a different way. And that's kind of the fact that you kind of have to devote your life, or not your life, but your cardistry towards perfecting. And that's what I kind of had to come to terms with. And that's kind of what I've not struggled with, but something that I definitely had to, like, essentially tell myself earlier on when I was trying to do cardistry, was that creating original moves within fanning is, it's just not there. You almost really can't do it. I mean, I've seen it a little bit over the years, but everything, when you truly look at it, and when you like truly look at it in, like, as the fan itself, it's always just a version or an extension of a different fan. And while a lot of people think, like, oh, it's a negative way of thinking, if you just broaden your mind, then other fans are different, that is true. And I don't think of it as, like, a negative way of thinking. It's just, like, a realistic way of thinking. Because I've seen a couple cardists who have messaged me and said, like, hey, I created this original new fan. And I think to myself, like, the word original, you got to use loosely, because it's just different. So, but yeah, so for the whole idea of perfecting versus creating, at least for me, I can't truly speak for every person who does fans, but at least for me, it's 99% perfecting. I've created a few fans, Trident and Osiris fan, but I've kind of fallen under the mindset when I've created fans that I'm creating them just for the idea of creating them, or for selling them, like I did with Trident fan. And that, in my opinion, lowers the quality. And I found myself also just not getting the satisfaction from truly creating versus perfecting. Like, obviously, when I'm fiddling around, I do try and do new stuff. Either I specialize in new grips, or I spread the cards a different way, or sometimes you can just add a whole different deck to a fan, which I'll get into later with the deck conditioning, and how that's unique to fanning. But yeah, creating moves, it's almost just not there for fans, and in a true creating sense. But yeah, it's different than other styles.
I think it's really interesting, because that's like the opposite of kind of the mindset of the cardist, right? Of cardistry right now. We're just like, let's make as much as humanly possible. Let's explore this to the full capability. But then you do have some of these certain subgenres that have kind of almost already been explored fully. So it is interesting. And it might be healthier mentally almost for that, because you don't have to have that pressure, I guess, of trying to bring something new to the table, which I think can be unhealthy sometimes in the community. But like you said, like, if you do a good fan and there's a certain level of satisfaction once you've perfected that thing, to the extent that you want it. One thing you were mentioning right there at the end was kind of deck conditioning. And that's something I would really love to hear about, 'cause that's something I never really think about. Like, obviously I realize the quality of a deck, whether it's sticky and stuff like that, but what are your thoughts on kind of deck conditioning for fanning?
I don't want to say, like, I'm unique in this sense, but I'm one of the people that is, I wouldn't say the most to talk about regarding this. So it's really cool that I get to express this, because for deck conditioning for me, for fans, it's almost a whole new world compared to doing cuts. And especially in the realm of fanning powder, because for some fans, fanning powder is almost required. So the conditioning of decks has to be completely different than other fans. And when I say this, I compare it to cuts in the sense of, yes, certain cuts require or certain moves require different conditioning. But with fanning, it's almost in its own realm, because most cuts or most cardists, you can ask them, like, what did you do to condition your deck for the cut? And they'll be like, the hell does that mean? They just opened the deck and they just performed moves until they were satisfied with how the deck felt, and they just recorded with that deck. For fanning, it's completely different. I own, I want to say, 150-ish decks. All of them, almost all of them, are powdered, and some decks I have devoted just for certain fans. And what I mean by that is certain fans, especially, and I can't speak for everyone again, but for me, because of the temperature and the humidity up here where I live, it's a very humid climate. So my decks often get, like, not warped, but they get somewhat sticky in a sense, and they get very clumpy. So really quickly, certain moves that rely on either gravity or just pressure outside of the hands, so things like Riffle Fan or Clubber Lang Fan, after a week of using the cards, you can't do them. You just can't do them. So, for that conditioning, what I've found, and a lot of people kind of have realized this, but a lot of people don't realize this, is that I found it very, not easy, but I found a unique way of conditioning my decks. And this is going to surprise maybe even you, to the point where decks that I use for fanning, I just don't cut them ever at all. And I can show this. This is the what's it called? It's not Black Fontaines. Halloween, I think. Yeah, that one. I got
Halloween
this.
is the black and
Yeah.
orange, yeah.
I got the, it has like the slight orange around the F. I got this from a friend, and I initially immediately started recording with it, and I powdered it, and I never cut it. And this is something you can see with a couple of my cards, and this is kind of like a downside to my version of fanning. Other people have found ways of being able to cut your cards. And be able to do really well, really good fans. I think it was Andre and Eddie have found ways to do that. I don't know if it's because of their climate or because they rotate decks more often than not. Because for me, I use the same deck over and over and over because I really get into the mindset of like, oh, I want to perfect this fan, but other decks don't fan as well as this deck in this fan, so I only have to use this deck. And you can see that with because when I'm just fiddling with cards, I do a lot of thumb fans, and my thumb never changes positioning when I do thumb fans. So you can see there's marks where the back design of the card has come off because of my thumb being there for the fans. And that's something that a lot of people look at and they go, "Why the hell are you doing that?" But for me, I found it because the cards, after you powder them, they get used to each other in a sense. And especially, and this is especially a thing with USPCC cards with the air bubbles, is that I think, like, I don't know how it works, but because fanning powder reduces friction, I think it is, between the cards, if you have a deck that you just never cut, the deck essentially stays, like, it gets, like what I said, it gets used to each other to the point where the deck just feels it more consistent over time. Whereas with cutting, the cards are not used to each other because how I've described this to a person in the past, if you set your deck down, whether it's in the deck box or on a surface overnight or something, then the card on the bottom gets very used to the surface that you put your deck on. And this is something that a lot of people don't notice because they're cutting, so they don't notice how the cards are used to each other. But for fanning, this can be a problem because, and I hope it this deck does it. Actually, I have a deck right here that does it. My personal favorite deck for fanning. It's the Anglo Rainbow Edition. We have a thing that, at least that I call them, they're called powder clumps, where if you cut a deck like that while you're fanning, you get that because the card isn't used to the card that's next to it. So I have found it very easy to do fans that are otherwise really difficult for some people, like Naoki, if I just don't cut the cards ever. So that's how deck conditioning works for me. And obviously I use powder, but something that also people have done in the past, things like people like Predator have done, is they took a nail file and they filed down the edges of the cards so that they're softer. And I don't know how this works, but it makes the cards feel really good, and I've done this before. Also taking bars of soap and lightly putting an X and then rubbing the cards together essentially creates a similar effect to fanning powder. But so yeah, conditioning for fans is really different for fanning versus for cutting. And like what I said about having certain decks for certain fans, some fans require different pressure within the hands, because that's a big thing of how you get fans to be really even is applying pressure, whether it be on different fingers or just through the deck entirely. So certain decks, like I have Shodos here, I use them. I don't use them for Naoki or anything like that because they require a lot more pressure, so they clump up a lot more like that. Versus a lot softer deck that I have conditioned less over time. The new Dan and Dave Smoke and Mirrors, they're a lot softer, so they don't split up as much. And that's why I would be using this deck for something like Naoki more, whereas this deck, the Shodos, I can get a lot better results out of thumb fans with them because I can get them a lot more even because it requires a lot more pressure. So that's what I say when I mean I have different decks that would do different fans. Because, like I said, yeah, deck conditioning for fans is in a whole new league, and it's something you have to really think about when you're doing fans, especially on days of recording. So, yeah, that's really different.
Yeah, there's definitely some really interesting stuff there, especially when with the paint coming off of the Halloween fontanes there. That's very interesting.
I have a lot of decks that are
And
like that.
you showing the kind of, yeah, that's funny. I think as like a packet cutter, like I'm mostly a packet cutter at this point too. Like those certain things like that, you take into consideration like a poop deck versus a new deck, but it's never to the extent of like kind of what you're saying there. Or I guess it's to that extent, but we're taking completely different things into factor as opposed to what you're taking into account when you're doing a fan. So we're like looking at like how clumpy and like how smooth and all that stuff. One thing that we talked about doing that I'm really excited for because I've never done it is kind of going like a walkthrough of actually powdering a deck. So I guess we can do that there. Do you have any recommendations on what types of deck to powder or what condition to start the powdering process?
Never powder a brand new deck. I found that brand new decks essentially come with this like gloss feeling, especially USBCC and smooth finish decks. Tallies are awful for this. If you ever want to hate yourself, powder a brand new tally. But I'd say the more pooped a deck is, the better, but to an extent. I have decks that are beyond saving for fanning powder. But you'd be really surprised that the condition a deck can be in when you powder it. And an example, a perfect example of this is, and a lot of people have asked me, like, can a deck, like, does it matter the type of the deck when you powder it, like plastic versus actual cards, plastic coating, the manufacturer, whether it just be USPCC or TPCC, stuff like that. This is a plastic coated Harry Potter Walmart deck that I got for like $2 that I just don't care about, and this deck handles perfectly with powder. So you would genuinely be surprised with how much powder can really do to your cards. So I would say the more broken in, I'd say the better for fanning with fanning powder. But I have a deck that I can show for the effect of fanning powder. So
All right.
yeah. So I have my deck here. This looks good for most people, but it feels like ass in my hands. What I do is, and the only requirement I say for a deck to be able to powder is people to be able to do a farrow. That's if the deck can't farrow, give up. So I do a farrow. Obviously, the better, the more even, the better. But we're gonna be doing a giant fan with the cards. And once you do that, take a little bit of powder. And I say for powder, less is more. It's like a very light sprinkling. You can almost barely see it within the cards. Very light sprinkling. That's why I'm really happy with these new tubs of fanning powder that Murphy's and Penguin Magic have, because they have the little like salt shaker little nozzles. I have a friend who has fanning powder that just came in like a cylinder, and you just take the cap off, and it's all the powder inside like flour. And it's like, oh, I hate that. I hate that so much. And what you're gonna do is you're gonna close it. And while you close it, you're going to tilt the deck with the powder. It's going to all go to one side of the deck. And you can see that here. You want to hold that up. And I hold it in this style. So it's as if you're about to bridge it, but you keep your thumb on the side. So take that thumb that's on the face of the cards right there, put that on the top. Yeah. And you're going to slowly close in. As you do, you're going to rub the fanning powder in between the cards, and notice that it incorporates it over time. That's as you close the deck. Because the reason I do a giant fan is that it allows the cards to have air in between them, and allows the powder to get trapped in between them. And the first thing I would do is do another farrow. But what I do is I take the deck and I flip it 180. So, yeah, exactly. And this one you're going to bridge, and watch out. If you put a little extra powder on it, the powder might spray everywhere. Not spray everywhere, it'll become like a dust.
Okay,
So,
I think
yeah.
mine's probably gonna do that. Not too bad.
Not as bad. Yeah. And then now after that, it's just a whole process for a couple minutes of just farrowing, springing, and then riffling the cards to get the powder incorporated and used to the deck. And that's essentially how you powder cards. And if you find that it's not enough, or the deck still feels slightly clumpy, I would say either wait a week to powder it again and maybe use less powder, or powder it again and do it on the opposite side, as I would say. So when I say opposite side, I mean like if you powdered the back design, flip it over and do the faces now. But But most decks, especially USBCC, are manufactured well enough where you don't need to do that.
Oh gosh. Yeah, I can already tell the
It's
difference.
yeah, it makes the cards feel different, and you can instantly tell how the cards feel.
Yeah, that's
But
pretty wild.
some people don't like the feeling of it. I don't remember what decks feel like it without it, so I can't really say that. But yeah. But yeah, and another thing that
And
people.
then at what point do you think to not like Faro Shuffle and stuff so that they can just be used to the cards in between? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I'd say if you powder a deck, at least for me, once I powder a deck, I work it in for like 20 minutes, 30 minutes immediately. And this involves cutting it, Faro Shuffling it, springing it, and everything like that. But if you really want to devote that deck to fans, then after that 30 minutes, just don't touch it. I say just put it in a box and let it sit for like 2 days in like your collection. And then once you come back, that deck will be the best feeling deck for fanning you'll ever feel. Because that's just how powder works. I don't know the science behind it, but that's just how it works. Some decks take better to powder than others. Cardamundi's, one of their finishes. I don't remember the one that where are
B9.
they? Not B9 was too thick, I felt. The one that these came in, the 2020s. It was the
I think E7. I don't
one of those.
know.
These took to powder instantly. I almost didn't have to break them in. And I was talking to Lars about this when I sent him a video of the deck after I had powdered it. And he's like, "Oh, how I didn't realize that Cardamundi was better for fanning." And I was like, "Well, USBCC decks usually I have to break the deck in for a couple days before I powder it. I was able to get this deck fanning perfectly within like 2 hours. Like, didn't have to put it away. It like Cardamundi decks just take to powder, oh, so well. USBCC decks, a little different. A lot of people know that, sorry, Card Mafia. I fucking hate USBCC decks. I hate how they feel because they take, at least I don't hate how they feel. They just take forever to do, for fanning. Also, another thing, and this is a thing maybe deck conditioning can fall under. I don't know if the camera will be able to pick it up. The cards are, for USBCC, the cards are not cut evenly. They'll try and square perfectly. On this side, the card is cut thinner than on this side. And that's a thing you notice when you're fanning. Like this deck, I have the entire deck assorted so that all the thin cuts or the thin cards, the thin borders are on one side and it's on the other. Because, especially for USBCC decks, because they mass produce, just cut them with the I don't know if it's with a laser or if it's with like actual blades. But it cuts them differently. And Cardamundi's decks are not like that. A lot of other manufacturers cut them perfectly even. I know Taiwan TWPCC is amazing with that. Like you'll never find a bad bordered card. I remember I saw I think I have it saved somewhere. I remember I saw a what was that guy's name? And not Andrew. He had the guy that made Nox. I don't remember
Oh,
his.
yeah, Andrew Pandrea.
Yeah, him. He opened. It was so
Alex
funny.
Pandrea.
Alex Pandrea. Yeah. He. Somebody. At the con. Somebody opened one of his decks, and the deck was like. It was so funny. It was like half the back design. The board was in the middle. Half the back design was here. Then it was half white, and then it was like a third of the other back design of the card that was next to it on the sheet. And it was like, dude, USBCC, you gotta figure it out, bro. It was
Yeah.
so funny, but.
I think that's a pretty common, like one of the biggest complaints for USPCC, for packet cutters at least, is that I know that on the playing card Reddit, there's just a collection of pictures of just absolutely
Just
terribly
butchered.
cut cards where you'll have like a bit, like you'll have cards that aren't even rectangles. They'll be like tortilla chips and stuff like that that people have opened. It's just totally
Yeah.
bizarre. So it's very interesting that like, because most people in the community, I think, prefer USPCC, at least for packet cuts and stuff like that. But for you, it sounds like it might not always be the best option. So that's very interesting.
I have my ranking of stocks and finishes that I prefer over other ones. I had a list on my old phone that was all the stocks and finishes that I can think of, and I actually ranked them with a friend of mine. who was like really into like stocks and finishes of cards, and he was also into fanning, so maybe there's a correlation with that. I don't know. But yeah.
So now that we've had our deck kind of conditioned, what do you think are some of the hardest fans that would need that conditioning? What are some of the hardest fans to do, or do you think are to teach?
I'll split that up for two like separate answers, hardest fan to do and versus hardest fan to teach, because there are differences. Hardest fan to do that doesn't require powder, I'd say probably Curlicue. Maybe it's just because I hate that move. I can't do it. Stupid move. Hardest fan to do with powder. I don't want to say Naoki, but probably Naoki. Naoki's really hard. Even with the tips that I've given people, it's just really, really difficult. It's also one of the moves that almost requires powder. I've been able to do Naoki without powder now that I've done the move over and over, and I know how the move works and the mechanics literally behind it. But doing it without powder is just not, almost not possible if you don't have, if you haven't done the fan before. So I'd probably say Naoki. Hardest fan to teach. Definitely Carnahan. I hate that move for teaching. I actually, it's funny because I have permission straight from Dan and Dave Buck, or I think it was. I'm not gonna bother trying to remember which one of them I asked. It was in person. I don't know the difference. Sorry, Dan and Dave. You're literal twins. I don't. It was one of them. I asked them at Con, or I asked him. I'm gonna say him at Con. And I showed him my Carnahan and everything. He's like, "Yeah, I would love to have somebody post an updated 360 Carnahan tutorial because the only one that's on the internet, sorry for the creator, is ass." And my friend Luke, who in my opinion has the best Carnahan that I've ever seen, Luke Saywall, he was originally gonna post a Carnahan tutorial and he showed it off on Reddit and everything. And then like a couple months down the line, he messaged a bunch of people, including myself in the community, who can do Carnahans, and he's like, "I have no idea how to teach this move." And I tried to do it too. I tried to like film myself trying to teach the move for a while, and I kind of realized it's so personal with the amount of pressure that you have to put on the cards because it's different for everyone. It's not like Thumb Fan or Naoki where you can get a different result just by changing, or not Naoki, but like Thumb Fan or like Smear Fan by changing where the card is or where the deck is in your hand, where your thumb goes on for Thumb Fan. For Carnahan, it's so different and unique. Other than every other fan or fan, that it's just it's impossible to teach. Like I genuinely think it's like almost impossible to teach. Like you can tell people the basic motion of the fan, you can tell people like the hand positioning and how to flip the cards, and but after that, you can't do it. It's 'cause it's like in my opinion, it's like describe to someone like how do you move your leg? How do you breathe? It's not how that works. Like you just can't do it. It's describing personal pressure within a deck. You can't do it because you can always say just apply more pressure, apply less pressure. But then you can ask like, what does that even mean? Like, don't hold the deck as hard? I don't know. It's like it's so hard to teach, and that's something I've kind of realized because originally I and this is a thing that people know. I was gonna do what I called the fanning tutorial bundle, where I was. This is before I left the community. I was going to compile every fan that I knew and record it and then put it on YouTube as a tutorial. For, obviously free because I'm not making money off other people's creations. But I kind of came into a realization really quickly that doing fans and teaching them really different. Because with cuts, it's different. Not completely different, but different to the point where when you're teaching a cut, you're not really teaching as much pressure. You're essentially telling people, like, your fingers go here, the cards move this way. And forgive me if I'm butchering that for people who have actually taught good tutorials for cuts, but that's really how a lot of cuts are taught. Whereas with fans, it's really, really different because you're with for a lot of fans, especially like Thumb Fan. Your fingers, they almost don't move for a lot of fans. Your hand is just stationary, and it's just how your fingers react to the cards and the pressure that your fingers are putting on the cards. And that is something that is not really easily taught, like at all. So for hardest move to teach, definitely Carnahan. And I want to say just a lot of fans in general are just super, super hard to teach compared to how they are to learn. Naoki included. And yeah, it's also another weird thing about fans in the aspect of perfecting over creating. There's also teaching over learning, and teaching fans is a lot harder than it is to learn them, in my opinion. So, but yeah.
Yeah, I could see how that would potentially cause some problems depending on, like you said, pressure is something you can't really like measure when you're trying to do it yourself. There's a lot of aspects that you can't necessarily take into consideration or get into the specifics of because it might be different depending on the deck or the person. One thing I'm kind of interested in is some of potentially your favorite back designs for fans because that's something I think more and more companies are taking into account, like Virtuoso and Orbit. I know they're adding bits to make sure their fans are a little bit more visually appealing. What are some of your favorite deck designs for fans?
So my opinion on this has changed a lot throughout the years. A lot of cardists fall into the category of really liking borderless decks. Things like these are the Mandela playing cards. There's another deck called Mandela playing cards. I don't know which ones these are. These are designed by Alex Chung. Sorry if I pronounced that wrong. That's the only difference I know from these versus the other ones. The other ones I think are Cardamundi. These are Taiwan playing cards, but a lot of cardists they prefer borderless because it allows for mistakes to be, and this is not I don't think the reason, but subconsciously it allows for mistakes to be hidden almost, and a lot of people also just like the connecting like grade not gradient but the connecting like of the cards within a border or within the borderless. But over the years, I've gotten less and less into borderless cards and more transition towards borders. Obviously, I like thinner borders. Which is why for a deck like this, like I mentioned, the thick and thin borders, you'll never see me fanning a deck in a video with the thick borders. It's always going to be with the thin borders. But over the years, I've got a liking into a lot different decks. Right now, I'd have to say these are one of my favorites, and I didn't think I'd like these as much when Card Mafia reached out to me regarding them. But maybe it's just like the simple design. Which is what I've been liking a lot recently. Is really nice for a lot of fans. Probably this, I'd say my all-time favorites would be the 2020s by Goose, or these are the Rainbow Angelos, which you can find online. If anybody wants, they can DM me, and I have a link where you can see them. That is not actually findable through Google. You have to have a link for it. Don't know why. Don't ask. Don't know. Super strange, because you can only get them in Sweden. So there's that. But yeah, so for decks that I really like right now, probably the Dan and Daves and these two. And yeah, I like I said that changes a lot throughout the years. I remember there was a time where, and I'm still kind of obsessed with these are the Magician Nose decks, or the Chromatic version. They have a gradient of the color spectrum on the cards, and that's something I really like with certain decks is when the design on each card is different, because I think that forms a pattern in of itself. And I think for decks like this, and I'm gonna go on another tangent here, for certain fans, this opens up a whole new realm of possibility. Like with Double Fan, a fan that you can do that's essentially just two fans. Why am I describing it? I can just show it. God. You know, for a person who does cards, I don't do cards very well. It's a fan where you do a thumb fan on the back of a deck with half of it, and then you flip it around and you do another fan. This is not very good, but you do another fan on top. And for certain decks that have different back designs, it almost provides a layer. And it's the same thing with Osiris Fan, that people can see, like on my profile picture. Osiris Fan is a huge, almost spiral of cards. It's like a double layer thumb fan. With decks that have different back designs like this one and this one, it makes it almost a new fan, which is really cool. And that's something I really like that like to see if decks can essentially go into more, like something I've always wanted, and I hope maybe Zach does this eventually, is a gradient Fontaine. So a Fontaine that combines all of the colors in the color spectrum or something like that, so that in fans it can be different. But yeah, so for the original question, over time, my deck back design liking has changed from more really busy fan back designs with borderless cards to going towards more simple designs. So, because I think with more simple designs, it lets the fan not speak for itself. It puts the fan in the forefront rather than look at this back design. So maybe that's my mentality behind it.
Yeah, and then kind of following up on kind of just decks in general, kind of talked about design there. When it comes to like the actual, like straight out of the box feel, what do you think are some of the better cards that fan well just straight out of the box that you could probably get right now, like the Anglos?
Anglo, Poker 09 Finnish Anglos. I have a video, I think it's deleted on my old phone because I had my phone replaced, where I, because a lot of people have asked, like, they said to me, like, oh, well, you can't, fanning is almost like a hoax because, or not a hoax, it's almost like a thing where it's like you're not fanning, you're just using fanning powder because the fanning powder does everything for you. I bought a brand new, it was a green Anglo Poker 09, and I opened it and in the same video did an almost perfect Naoki because they just feel that good. I don't know how they do it. They're amazing. And they're $7 a deck. $7. I mean, obviously shipping is going to be ass if you don't live in Sweden because you're shipping from Sweden. So that's why I've always bought my Anglos in bulk, but they're just amazing. The Poker 09 finish from Anglos are just amazing. Other than that, Cardamundi decks feel really good. Anything from Cardamundi has felt amazing. These are Hanson Chen. I don't remember what they are. I think it's like luxury finish or something like that. Because you can mix and match finishes and stocks when you print with them. I think it's luxury finish. And one of the stocks feels amazing. It's the stock that, what's it called? That Showdozer printed on. I'll see if I can message Nej and see if I can get his, he's the creator of the Showdoze. I'll see if I can get his insight on which stock and finish they are. But yeah, so Poker 09s, anything from Cardamundi that's recent. B9 I felt was, it didn't feel very good for me. It felt too thick and too soft. It warped too much. And Hanson Chen decks, especially the Ventus and the Showdoze, felt amazing out of the box. Just truly perfect.
So a new segment that I'm trying to do on Carter Street Talk is kind of just feeling out different music recommendations from people, because I think that's something that's pretty universally is another hobby that a lot of cardists are into, is just music and really wild and weird things. So for you personally, do you have any music recommendations that you think might be underrated or things that are just really good that you want to talk about?
For me personally, and I kind of resonate with this with a lot of other cardists, lo-fi is a really big thing. Especially just because of the chill factor and because it's something that is in the background that allows you to just, I don't want to say mindlessly just do cardistry, but basically just like autopilot through cardistry. And it's something that I've seen a lot of other cardists do where they just put on music in the background, they set their tripod up on their camera and they just record. And I guess the music or like having a YouTube video in the background allows them to just tangent with cards, and I've seen a couple people that's how they've created some moves. So I would say that for me personally, having music that sits in the background is great for just doing cardistry. So, and I think the thing that fills that is lo-fi, and the thing that's great about lo-fi is it's so customizable. I guess there's a million different genres of lo-fi that you can get that are more for sleeping, more for studying, which is the personal one that I've found. There's the lo-fi girl stream that everybody knows, that you just put it in the background, it's on YouTube, and it just sits there. Other than that, a lot of bass music for me is what I listen to. But at the same time, like, music for me, it determines essentially the moves or the mood of the fanning, because some fans are more chill and just like in the background for me, like Naoki or just doing thumb fans, but a lot of other fans, like Inverse Fan or other fans that force you to like kind of focus on the move more, require, or not focus on the move, but like a little bit of pay attention to the move and thinking about what you're doing. More intense music maybe is better for that, but yeah, so lo-fi would be my answer, just any lo-fi.
Awesome. Yeah. I'm sure that's something a lot of people can relate to or will relate to. So, kind of wrapping things up, I think we've hit most of the topics I think we wanted to hit. At the end of the show, I like to do what I call roll out the close-up pad. That's just my fancy way of saying, is there anything that you would like to promote or any last nugget you would like to leave the audience with before we kind of wrap things up?
Not really. A lot of people who are into fans already know me within the community, so I guess just following my Instagram would be the best. I'm always posting things on my stories, whether it's ideas for fans, and if you ever see a post from me, then well, it's gonna be rare, but if you ever see a post from me, then you'll know it's gonna be either like, in my opinion, a really cool idea or a theoretical perfect presentation of a move. So following my Instagram would be definitely a really good hub for fans. So that's at Bechard Ryan, BechardRyan. No spaces, that's it.
And like always, I'll have links to his stuff in the description of the YouTube video if you guys want to check those out. I recommend you do. This has been a really fun one, really insightful for me. First time using powdering fan. I've had this powder fan for legitimately years and I've never used it. So exciting to kind of learn that. Ryan, thanks for taking your time to be on the show. I hope everybody learned something, gained some knowledge, had a little bit of fun. I know I did. And we will see you guys. Well, I will see you guys next week. And maybe we'll have Ryan on again. Thanks for your
I'd
time.
love that. Thank you for having me. It's been really nice.
Absolutely.